This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The Affordable Care Act went before the Supreme Court on Tuesday for oral arguments. No decision has been made yet, but Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh appear to be in support of upholding the act. This is the latest attempt by Republicans to get the ACA repealed, though striking the act down entirely has so far proved elusive. In the backdrop of all this is a surging pandemic and a presidential election where health care was a major part of the discussion. Here with us to talk about what came of Tuesday's hearing is Leah Littman. She's assistant professor of law at the University of Michigan and co-host of the Strict Scrutiny podcast. Leah, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what were the highlights of Tuesday's hearing?
I think the highlights were the general sense that the court is not going to be invalidating the entire Affordable Care Act anytime soon. I think the millions of Americans who depend on the Affordable Care Act's protections for health insurance, as well as the many businesses in the health insurance market that have structured their goings-on around the Affordable Care Act, breathed a sigh of relief in light of that.
Explain the argument against the Affordable Care Act this time.
So the argument that the Republican-led states, together with the Trump administration, are making is that in 2017, when the then Republican-controlled Congress amended the Affordable Care Act provision that previously imposed a tax penalty for failing to purchase health insurance, the argument is that those amendments actually rendered that provision unconstitutional. While the amendments reduced the tax penalty for failing to purchase health insurance to $0, the states and the Trump administration are arguing that the amendments actually imposed a legal command obligating people to purchase health insurance, even though no such obligation existed before. They argue that that exceeds the scope of Congress's powers under the Constitution. And because that one provision, which is essential to the Affordable Care Act, is unconstitutional, the rest of the Affordable Care Act must be invalidated as well.
Well, here's Chief Justice Roberts responding to Kyle Hawkins, the Texas Solicitor General, who made the argument against the Affordable Care Act.
I think it's hard for you to argue that Congress intended the entire act to fall if the mandate were struck down. When the same Congress that lowered the penalty to zero did not even try to repeal the rest of the act. I think, frankly, that they wanted the court to do that, but that's not our job.
Leah, unpack what Justice Roberts is saying here.
Yes. So what he is saying is that the Congress that modified that one provision in the Affordable Care Act was not trying to repeal the rest of the act, including its protections for people with pre-existing conditions. We might all remember the moment when then-Senator John McCain walked to the Senate dais and put his thumbs down, voting against the proposed bill that would have repealed some of the Affordable Care Act's protections for people with pre-existing conditions. The reality was there was not a majority of votes to repeal the rest of the Affordable Care Act. And so what the Republican Congress did is it merely rendered largely a nullity the provision that imposed a tax penalty for failing to purchase health insurance. And the Chief Justice's point is, it's not our job, the Supreme Court's job, to get you the rest of the way when you didn't have the votes to repeal the rest of the Affordable Care Act in Congress.
We're talking to Leah Littman. She's assistant professor of law at the University of Michigan. She's also co-host of the Strict Scrutiny podcast. Leah, this is the third time the Affordable Care Act has come before the Supreme Court. What makes this time different?
I think what makes this time different is these are by far the weakest arguments that have been made against the Affordable Care Act. The very first argument rests on the idea that the Republican-controlled Congress actually made the minimum coverage requirement stronger rather than repealing it, which is what the president and Republican congressmen have bragged about doing. And it also rests on the even stranger premise that once Congress effectively repealed that one provision, the rest of the Affordable Care Act, which they decided to leave in place, must fall as well. So this is by far the weakest legal challenge. It is also coming at a moment when the country is in the grips of a pandemic and people need access to health care and health insurance. And equally importantly, it lacks the support of Republican officials, whereas previous lawsuits have enjoyed broad support from the Republican Party.
It's been about a decade since the ACA passed. Are we going to continue to see challenges to the ACA?
I think we are undoubtedly going to continue to see challenges to the Affordable Care Act. So even if this particular challenge does not hobble the Affordable Care Act, we may very well see future challenges that will do so. Just last term, the court heard two cases involving the Affordable Care Act, one involving funding for supplemental payments for covering people with pre-existing conditions, and another involving the requirement that health insurers provide coverage for contraception access. And this is not going to be the last lawsuit involving the Affordable Care Act by far.
But does it become more unlikely that it will be overturned as this, you know, continues to play out, and companies, as you said, structure their business around it? Americans are using the ACA. Is it likely to be overturned?
I think that the longer time passes, the less likely it is that a Supreme Court would be willing to invalidate the entire Affordable Care Act. That being said, there are now a significant number of justices on the court who do not think it is the proper judicial role to consider the consequences of a decision, but instead they maintain their only task is to ask whether the text of the statute means one thing versus another, and whether the statute comports with the meaning of the Constitution.
Well, the court has yet to make a final decision on this case. When is that decision expected to come?
By the end of June, by the end of the Supreme Court term.
Can we really take anything away from the oral arguments? Is that any indication of how the court might rule?
I think that oral arguments are sometimes an imperfect proxy for where the court is going to be. But in this particular argument, both the Chief Justice and Justice Kavanaugh were quite adamant about their views about whether the rest of the Affordable Care Act must fall. You add the two of their votes together with Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan, and Justice Breyer, all of whom were not at all receptive to the challenge to the Affordable Care Act. And I think it is safe to conclude that there are five votes to say the whole Affordable Care Act is going to stand.
Well, Justice Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation has a lot of people on the left worried about the new 6-3 conservative majority on the court. Basically, that the court will become an extension of the Republican Party. Will what we're seeing so far from this court stoke those fears or maybe quell some of the panic on the left?
I think that if the court upholds the Affordable Care Act, it will probably in the short term take out some of the energy on the left and among Democrats for court reform. But I think it would be a mistake to conclude that in light of this one decision, a 6-3 conservative court is not a significant obstacle to Democrats being able to enact their agenda. I think we are likely to see in the coming years the conservative court challenging a lot of what a Biden administration attempts to do through the executive branch. And I think there will be other decisions as well that will cause the left to wonder what exactly the Supreme Court is doing.
What do you think that means for the way the American people perceive the Supreme Court and its decisions?
I think it is possible that more people will come to see the court is really just another third branch of government, and they are not so meaningfully distinct from the other branches as far as how politically polarized it is, and also how the political party of an appointing president can reliably predict where a justice is and how a justice is going to vote on an important subset of cases. If that happens, then that might alleviate some people's concerns with more political branch control over the Supreme Court.
Leah, we've been talking about the case, the ACA case that came before the Supreme Court, but are there other cases you're keeping a close eye on right now?
Yes. So the U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit just upheld Harvard's affirmative action policy in admissions, holding essentially that under current Supreme Court precedent, that affirmative action program is constitutional. I think it is very likely that the Supreme Court could take that case and modify the law regarding affirmative action quite soon. Another case that the court is currently having on its docket is the case involving juvenile resentencing and whether juveniles can be sentenced to life without parole. I think that that is also an important case on the court's docket. And the other one I would add is Fulton versus City of Philadelphia, which concerns whether cities and states and local governments can, as a condition for entering into a contract with a private entity, ask that private entity not to engage in discrimination. All of those cases will be quite significant.
That's Leah Littman. She's assistant professor at law at the University of Michigan. She's also the co-host of the Strict Scrutiny podcast. Leah, thanks for coming on. We always appreciate your analysis.
Thanks so much for having me.
Up next, California voters passed Proposition 22 last week. It exempts gig-based apps like Uber and Lyft from classifying their workers as employees. We'll take a detailed look at Prop 22 and what it means for the future of gig workers. If you're a gig worker, we want to hear from you. Tweet us your questions about Proposition A at 1A. You can also drop a message on our Facebook page or email us at 1A@WAMU.org. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.